Take two. There we go. I have not had enough of the coffee yet this morning. Okay. As many people in this town may or may not be aware, as I've said earlier, I still play with toy trains. Long story, my therapist is involved. But anyway, the important thing and why it's relevant here today is this. I have before me a 40-year-old copy of Model Railroad Craftsman magazine, which dates from 1969, and its seeming irrelevance to our work here today is actually foretold by this. In an article from September of 1969 entitled "The Metroliner Effect," the Metroliner was an attempt to bring a high-speed train to America 40 years ago. Penn Central officials have been somewhat surprised by the increase in the number of people riding their regular trains along with the high-speed Metroliner routes. The heavy advertising campaign aimed at getting travelers out of the air and onto the trains between New York and Washington has worked well for all of the Penn Central's trains. The trains are timed for convenient departures, and the advertising has reminded East Coasters that riding is more fun than driving. The airlines aren't concerned. Their shuttle flights are overcrowded anyway. Who said the passenger train in all its forms is dead? And here's the tagline. Advertising, we see, pays off. And that is why we are here today at the Morro Bay Community.
Driftwood. Our featured speaker will be David Thomas, owner of the Shell Shop on the Embarcadero. And I'm quite sure that the Shell Shop has been quite a draw over the years to Morro Bay for the visitors. He started back in the 50s by picking up shells off of the beach and selling them to people, and it has morphed into a very successful business, and I'm sure he will be very entertaining. And the Historical Society potlucks are great because the average age of our members, I think, is about 70. And most of them still cook, so they bring great food, and everyone is invited. 5:30 Sunday evening.
And again, the address?
At the Episcopal Church, St. Peter's, and it's the corner of Driftwood and Shasta. So thank you, folks. Have a good meeting.
Thank you. Other presentations? Well, we have one right here. Yeah, go ahead. We'll move right along.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bill Boucher with the Public Services Department. I'm here to give you an update on where we are on the Morro Bay Boulevard roundabout project.
Are you preparing a rebuttal to the piece in the Tribune this week that compared our roundabout to an alien invasion? No.
Okay. I haven't seen it on a satellite photo, so I can't compare the graphics from outer space, no.
All right. Well, thanks. Yeah, as I said, I had mentioned this to some of the folks at the city council. Is more the question I had, or the query, if you will, was more of a scheduling thing right now.
Right.
Where do we stand? Because we've got Memorial Day weekend coming, followed
right.
by 4th of July. And the question being, what state will the entrance to our town be in for our principal holiday weekends?
And therein lies the rub, sir.
Uh-huh.
If you recall, the last time I came, we talked a little bit about how we had modified design and shifted the facility a little bit to the northwest, which was improving our the approach angles into the roundabout itself. One of the results of that shift was that we needed to acquire right-of-way from the mobile property. So during the month of February, we were preparing those exhibits. The council authorized us to move forward at their February 27th meeting, and we transmitted the acquisition documents to the mobile property owner and the U-Haul property owner. We have been working with the mobile property now for a little more than 2 months to seeking to get the right of access to the property in order to perform the improvements, and we have not as of yet gotten the approval to enter their property.
Just to make it straight, you're looking to get access to the mobile property. You're not looking to acquire or transfer ownership of a part of the mobile property.
Yes, we are looking to get about 350 square feet of right-of-way right in this area here where the new sidewalk and wheelchair ramp are to go is on land that's currently a mobile station. So we're going through the property appraisal process and the various other processes as required by law, and to enter is doing the appraisal and submitting all the documents to them. They review them. They give us a right of entry so that we can start to perform the physical improvements on that land in question, and then we finalize the acquisition. For the last 2 months, we've been working on the underground utilities, replacing them all through the intersection, water lines, sewer lines, storm drain lines. Unfortunately, many of the pipelines that were in existence were poorly documented, so if you were going through the intersection on a daily basis, you saw us struggling to carve a trail through these 60-year-old undocumented utility lines. We've pretty much completed that work. We've got a little bit of storm drain work to do over between the U-Haul and the mobile. The contractor tells us that they need about 30 days to complete what we call the surface improvements, which would be the concrete work and the paving and the miscellaneous work. And we know that we got a very narrow window. We are not proceeding with the improvements. We have a traffic control plan. So as to minimize the disruption to traffic, we need to start on the north side first. Effectively, what this first phase does is widens the road and constructs these facilities, the curb, gutter, and sidewalk, and the paving improvements on the north side while traffic goes through under relatively normal conditions. Once those improvements are in, then we come to the south side, which basically narrows down the south side, which would allow us to move the traffic onto the newly widened portion, and then the final phase would be the center itself with the splitter islands.
Does phase one, which you said was the upper corner there,
both sides.
Does that right where your pointer thingy was just hitting? Does that mean that Quintana is going to be blocked
no.
at that point? Okay.
No. There will be certainly lane control. So lane control while these improvements are being placed. We would do one side and then the other. So we're hinged upon minimizing the disruption to traffic. We are not going to be starting on the mobile property, which is kind of the linchpin for this phasing, until such time as we get the authorization to enter the property. From where we are now, it's very unlikely that we will have that authorization before Memorial Day. The contractor's been ready since late April to start on those improvements, but we're holding them off. Where it looks like right now, I would not be at all surprised with the scheduling that we could well be looking at a delay until after the summer. If you've looked at the U-Haul property, you see that it's not in particularly good shape. So we will probably be proceeding. I need to sit down with the contractor. We will probably proceed with the improvements along the U-Haul property, as we need to do substantial repairs, so we might as well put in the permanent fix. So presuming that we don't get this authorization within a matter of days, then what we will do is we will do the improvements along the U-Haul side, get everything cleaned up, do some pavement treatment, whether it be a slurry seal or a extended patching. We've got all these trench cuts across the street, and certainly up at the bridge, the pavement condition has been described as third world or Stalingrad. And so we would certainly under that circumstance, if we are going to delay these surface improvements, we would provide some pavement improvements in the interim.
I had a couple questions. What's the likelihood that Mobile will sign on? Is there a chance that they won't? Do you have a contingency plan if they don't sign on? And did your funding for the project include the acquisitions of these properties? And given that it's going to go probably way over your time frame, how is that affecting your budget for the project?
We can acquire the property. What we're striving to do is to acquire the property in a non-confrontational, cooperative manner, which the owner has committed to. If under the absolute worst case scenario, if we fail to agree, there are judicial processes which we can pursue to acquire. And we were talking an area roughly 20 feet long and 4 feet wide. Not a lot of property. And I would defer to Mr. Schultz on the time frame that would be involved there, but going through a judicial process would be quite slow. The funding, we have within the project budget, we do have the funds to acquire this both of these properties. Also within the project budget are contingency funds that we generally budget for unforeseen conditions, such as the unknown utility lines that we've had conflicts with and these project delays. What we would be looking at above and beyond what we're currently contemplating for the project, if we do the delay, would be the short-term pavement improvements, what we will call the temporary striping and legends, because at the end of the project, everything gets overlaid and new striping in the whole nine yards. But those costs to do the pavement improvements and the temporary striping would come from the existing contingencies budget. And then we would need to pay for increases in materials costs. We would anticipate that the cost of asphalt and other oil-based products are rising fairly rapidly. Concrete and base material, which are the three major components of this phase, are rising, and we're anticipating perhaps a 5% increase over the summer for those materials. The labor increases are not expected until at least late September. That's generally when the Department of Industrial Relations issues new
wooden reinforcement things. And, I'm not saying we have to do like when they have the Olympics in certain countries, they put up billboards to block the poverty from the view of people arriving from the airports. But something that there is a plan in effect to tidy up and button up the city.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we do have the time for, even under, again, that worst case scenario, is we do have time to do cleanup.
All right. Well, thank you for that update. That's what we need to know. Thank you very much for coming this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Public comment continues. Please approach the microphone.
Hello.
Good morning.
My name is Lexi Brown, and I'm a graduate student at the University of California in Santa Barbara. And I came today to speak to you about our survey that you may have heard about at the beginning of the process last about a year ago. We did a survey of coastal users in Morro Bay this past summer. So I'm going to present to you on that really briefly, and I also wanted to give you some copies of the surveys and our project brief. So this is just a brief PowerPoint presentation, and I wanted to show you everybody else in the group that worked hard on this project for Morro Bay, because they couldn't make it today. So those are my other classmates and my advisor at the Bren School at UCSB. And our project was determining the knowledge, attitudes, and perceptions of tourists and coastal users in Morro Bay. So we developed this survey that you're looking at. This is the one that we used this past summer. And I'm just going to introduce the survey and talk a little bit about our methods for developing it, because that was really what we focused on this year. And then I'll show you our preliminary results. And the survey will continue on the coming years, and the results will become more robust and more useful to you. So as you know, we're in Morro Bay. And the reason why the survey was done in Morro Bay is because we're working with SLOSI, the San Luis Obispo Science and Ecosystem Alliance, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with. It's an ecosystem-based management group here in your city. And one of their initiatives is the Economic Indicators Initiative. And they're trying to determine economic indicators of economic health of the city that are connected to the environment, how the environment impacts the economy. So we were part of that. We were just a small part of that initiative, and we were trying to figure out what people think when they come to Morro Bay, what their perceptions are of the environment, and the activities that they engage in when they come, and how those activities and perceptions affect their spending in the city. That was sort of the general idea of the survey. So this is just to give you an idea of why the survey was needed, because as you see at the bottom here, ecosystem-based management, that's low C. If somebody, like a resource manager, makes a decision that affects environmental quality, then that environmental quality impacts what we call human dimensions, which is what people perceive the environment to be and their activities in the environment. And then those human dimensions, those perceptions and activities, again, influence management decisions in the future. And so our survey filled in this gap between environmental quality and human dimensions. Getting research approval by UCSB, so we were doing everything ethically so we didn't get in trouble. And then we also went through a bunch of revisions with our clients and with the SLOC committee and with some external reviewers at UCSB to make sure that we were putting together the best survey we could for the first go-round, that we would get the most valuable data. And we made a series of changes to the survey after we talked to all those people on committee. So we changed some of the questions. We added a Spanish version of the survey. We decided to make a separate resident and visitor survey. So you have in front of you the visitor survey, because that's the one we got the most responses on. But we also had a resident survey to make sure the questions were clear for both groups of people. And then we decided to go with this intercept format, which was, I'll explain later, but that was basically me talking to everybody. So our target was to get 200 to 400 surveys over the course of the summer, and we had 10 weeks. We chose 7 locations in Morro Bay, and we surveyed for 5 days out of the week, 3 weekdays and all weekends that we possibly could. And we had 3 time blocks that we used, 10 to 12, 1 to 3, and 4 to 6. And we mixed those up with the days to try to get a good view of the different types of people that would come at different times. And there were 2 surveyors, myself and a student from Cal Poly named Emily McFarland, and she's a recreation student. And so she was out there with me as well. She was there for about half the time. And basically what we did is we stood at each location, and we had a protocol where we approached people and asked them, told them a little about the survey, asked them if they would like to participate. And then we either interviewed them by reading the survey questions, or we allowed them to fill it out themselves. So we try to be really flexible to get the most number of people to answer the questions. And this is the map that we had at the end of the survey, which you guys have in front of you. And basically we asked people what activities they did in each place in the map. And that was trying to get an idea of the habitats that people interact with and how that influences their perceptions. And so we asked them about all of our survey locations, which were the Rock, the Sand Spit, Montandi Oro State Park, Los Osos Waterfront, which was went around Baywood Park and the Pasadena area, Morro Bay State Park, the Embarcadero, and the Harbor Waterfront. And then we had 3 locations on the map that we didn't actually survey at, which were the North Bay, the South Bay, and the tidal wetlands, because those would have been difficult to survey. So we just asked people what they did. And this is just a picture of the survey, which you have in front of you. It's the first page has our activities questions and our expenditure questions. And the second page has a demographic section and our perceptions questions. So we asked about people's activities in the bay, things like kayaking, surfing, bird watching, mountain biking, watching other marine wildlife, hiking, and then we had a series of others, beach going, etc. We also asked if they did these activities during past trips. Then we asked what they spent when they came to Morro Bay, and we asked them over their whole party. So if they were with a bunch of people, they could put the spending for everyone, just tell us how many people it was for. And those are the things we asked about for their spending. We tried to cover everything that they might do that would be specific to Morro Bay. And then we asked about their perceptions of Morro Bay compared to other similar locations on the Central or Southern California coast. So we wanted to give them something to compare Morro Bay to, because people don't generally have a good idea of what environmental quality means, except Morro Bay over time in terms of environmental quality in the last 5 years, and in terms of the working waterfront in the last 5 years. So our results were that we got over 600 surveys, which was well over our goal, so we're really happy about that. Most of them were visitor surveys, and we had a response rate of 86%, which is pretty high for a survey. I think that when people come to Morro Bay, they're generally in a good attitude, and they're happy to be here, so they answered our questions pretty happily. It's also the pace here is pretty it's not
casual.
Like being in the middle of L.A. Yeah. Yeah, so it was easy to have people stop and take a few minutes to take the survey. That's just showing you where we got all of our results. These are the locations. So Los Osos was the lowest just because there's not a place where you meet a lot of people. So I would walk around a lot of different places, but you just didn't see as many people. As you can see, most of the surveys were residents or visitors. And then these are the activities, and I just wanted to point out the most popular activities were the same for residents and visitors: dining, hiking, beach going, and shopping. This is for residents, and then for visitors, they're the same, except that more people did shopping than beach going when they were visitors, but they were pretty close. And then for environmental perceptions, we found that it seems to be pretty obvious. Residents were more likely to state an opinion, so they were less likely to say not sure about all those environmental perception factors that we asked about. And everybody, both residents and visitors, were positive in saying that Morro Bay was better than other places in terms of all of the factors, with the exception of fish abundance. Most people were actually not sure about fish abundance. 60% of residents and 71% of visitors said they were not sure. That was something that people, just in my experience talking to them, we don't have a statistic on it, but people tended to feel like they couldn't say anything about fish abundance if they didn't go fishing. So a lot of people just said not sure. And then this shows you what people thought of environmental quality in Morro Bay over the last 5 years. So most people said that there was no change in environmental quality. But if you look at the comparison between people who said it had worsened and had improved, visitors, which are in blue here, were more likely to say it had improved than worsened. But residents in red were more likely to say it had worsened than improved over the last 5 years. So there's a discrepancy there in terms of how people interact with the environment and their view of it. And the same pattern occurred when we asked about the working waterfront, which we defined as the harbor area downtown. So they also, there was a lot of people saying it hadn't changed, but visitors are more likely to say it improved, and residents that it had worsened. And residents also are more likely to give an opinion. Only 60% of visitors gave an opinion. And this is just to show you whether people said that environmental quality factors help determine their decision to visit, or for residents, their decision to spend their leisure time in Morro Bay. And so most people, these are the percentages of people who said, yes, environmental quality is a factor in our decision to spend our time here. But most people said this green section, they said they didn't care which factor, just generally that the environment was good, influenced their decision. But those who did choose a factor, most of them chose access to open space. So that was the biggest factor in people deciding either to visit Morro Bay or to spend their free time. If they were hiking, all had positive perceptions of open space. So it seemed like most people who come to Morro Bay had that positive perception. And camping and shopping, those people have more positive perceptions of environmental quality change over time. And then a couple of the activities had negative associations with environmental factors. So boating, people who boated tend to have more negative environmental quality over time perceptions than people who didn't go boating. And beach going, the same thing for water quality. So you notice both those two things are water-related environmental factors and water-related activities. So it seems to be that the weakest perception link was the water-related things, that people were more likely to have a more negative perception relative to other people who didn't do those water-related activities. And then we looked at whether the place that people visit when they come to your city influenced their environmental quality perception. So if they visited the tidal wetlands area, the sand spit, the south part of the bay, the state park, Morro Bay State Park, Los Osos Waterfront, The Rock, or Montana de Oro, all those places, if they visited those, they tended to have more positive perceptions of the environment than the people who didn't visit those places. And if they visited these places, they tended to have more negative perceptions of the environment. So we had some recommendations which are more I guess, for the slow sleep people, we recommended some changes to the survey, which will be happening this summer again. So we'll have a slightly different survey than the one you see in front of you, and we're trying to gather some better data. We had some changes in terms of how we asked the questions about activities and spending to make the data more useful to you and everybody in your city. But we did find that we created a usable survey instrument. Even though it had some limitations, we obviously got a lot of responses, which is one of the things you really want from a survey, so that was good. And we had these preliminary data results, and we created a profile of the type of people that come to your city, but we need a little more information over a long term and to really get better ideas of the relationships with spending and some of these activities. And then we wanted to thank all the people involved. And SLOCI, the Audubon Society, gave us our office space for the summer. And the Harbor was really supportive. And then if you want more information, those are some websites to go to, including our student website.
Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much. First of all, my hat, which I'm not wearing, is off to all the students, graduate students, who participate in this. This is an extremely valuable thing, and we thank you for your time and effort in putting this into Morro Bay. The first thing is, there are more details in your PowerPoint than there are in this actual report. How and when? Is it one of those website links where I can actually download the more details?
Yes. So we have a 100-page thesis paper that we wrote out of it.
Yes.
That will be on our group project website. I'm not sure. We had a couple problems with our servers at Bren recently, so it might not be on there right now, but it should be on there within a week. And then the coastalvalues.org, they are going to have a lot of data there. That's not me, so I'm not responsible for it.
And there's a few things on the second page as well, but anything related to demographics about the people who come, mm-hmm. what they spend, mm-hmm. how long they stay, those are the things. I mean, the other information is obviously very important as well, but this is really what pertains to this group in the sense of marketing. So this gives us some really great information.
Sure, summaries of
the take a zip code from the people on this?
We do. We don't always get it.
Okay, but where possible, zip codes would be a big mm-hmm. thing to show us, because then you could take zip codes, put them in a program, plot it over a map of Southern or Central
right.
California, and begin to see
where people are coming from.
You know, the famous Venn diagram with the overlapping circles. I like those, yeah.
That's a great job.
Thank you.
Also, what I might say is, please stand by. Now, I know you probably have class or places to go. But item new business F, review of DVD on ecotourism. When we get there, and I don't ask you to wait, though we can chat at a later time, ties in. We'll get to that part of the agenda, but there'll be a 6-minute presentation by a woman from Lufkin, Texas, mm-hmm. who's working with the Conservation Fund, which is conservationfund.org. I mean, big. These are people who spend millions and millions to preserve habitats and promote environmental tourism. And it's exactly this kind of data and seeing these numbers here today that having been to the Conservation Fund website means when the city's looking forward and how to move itself to a different economy, this having had this work done already for us is going to be extremely beneficial. So I won't make you wait the whole time. I can get you a copy of that at a later date. But I say to people watching, remember this part for later because there will be a connection. And how do we – they give you a card from the school?
I could forward your information mm-hmm. to everyone if you'd like to.
Sure. Could you? I'd appreciate that, Heather. Yeah. Thank you very, very much. Well, thank you very much for coming this morning. We really appreciate that.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any other public comment? Rob, did you want to use public comment for anything? No. Okay. I noticed it wasn't on the agenda, though. I had mentioned it to Bridget from two meetings ago. We were waiting for an update on the trademark thing. And I don't know if you can handle that as public comment.
It's been declared a future agenda item for the city council. So someone, I think I had talked to you, and I said, that's the easiest way. I have to go through council to get assignments from
them. Future. Oh, I thought they were going to put it on the agenda that very week. But okay.
No, it's a future, and it'll probably come in June, at least as to some basic principles of it and where they want to put that on my list of things to do and how soon, or whether we can just send it out to someone else. So I'm doing a little research on it, find out who does trademarks in the area, and what their cost would be. It might be simpler just to send this out to a trademark attorney to do so. But it should be. I'd look either at the first or second meeting in June to come to City Council.
I think,
and they might, you know, send it back to you guys for some more information. But it's a simple process. It's whether I'm going to be able to handle it and what that time frame would be and where they want to put that on my priorities, or whether we have to send it out to a trademark attorney to do.
Okay, John, you.
I was just going to say the motivation behind this was that we saw a case where Monterey came up with a slogan that was actually Folsom's slogan, and Folsom had copywritten it or trademarked it, I guess, whichever is the appropriate one, and they actually got them to not use it. And I think that with the Discover Your Better Nature, since we're spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years on branding.
Anyone have comments? Notations as such? No? All right, seeing no comment, vote on the approval of the minutes. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All right, minutes so approved from the last meeting. This brings us to the Visitor Center report. Welcome. Nice good. Tie. Good to see you.
Well, thank you. Good morning, everyone. The Visitor Center is always an active place. Certainly these days, as we're getting close to summer, more and more people are coming in and more people are calling, using the internet, all those things to reach out and find out what Morro Bay is all about. You can see from our report that there's been some activity going on with some of the fulfillment. You can see Sunset has been pretty active, as well as Travel 50 and beyond, which is kind of the bulk of responses and things. And I noticed on my email yesterday that we have more coming in from Sunset. So. A lot of activity going on there, so it seems to work very, very well. And we keep track as best as we can, referrals that the Visitor Center actually has as people walking in, as well as phone calls regarding businesses in our community. And you can see there were 1,405 referrals that we're giving out during that course of the 30 days. It is pretty much self-explanatory, the rest of it, and I don't know how much detail you want to get onto it. The 800 numbers, again, pretty self-explanatory. A lot of states calling in. You can see not a lot of people from those states, but it's a lot of activity. I thought that was pretty interesting, you know, that actually we get people calling in from all over the place. Interesting how that works, and then of course the breakdown of the 800 calls, were they coming from northern, southern, central, or coastal? Any questions about that? Then we'll get into the chamber part of it, and of course this is the third Thursday, which is our mixer night. Seven Sisters Gallery will be hosting it, as well as the county of ECP is going to be part of it on the Embarcadero. Yeah, right. And there should be a lot of activity there tonight, as I understand, bands and good food and good drinks. So, 5:30 to 7. That's every Thursday, every third Thursday of every month. So attend that one tonight because it's really going to be a good one. Of course, we have some conflict with the budget hearing tonight as well, but I think people can do both. Event is the 4th of July, and as all of you know, this is a fundraising. It's not so much a part of a budget of the chamber as it is community involvement. I know that the mailers have went out through the water bill as far as donations go. Fireworks have gone up about 50% this year for a lot of reasons, I guess. And so we need as many donations as possible to make it all happen. Regardless of what happens, it will go on. We have a great lineup of music, a lot of activities, the same type of community events. They're going to be participating with the egg, maybe the egg toss this year. It was the egg run, which was pretty enjoyable. Tug of wars, dunk tanks, bounce houses. Keep that in mind. Let's see. Saturday is the Mermaid and Pirate Parade on the Harbor Walk. It will start at the Rock, and we will actually walk. The parade will end up by Dockside, and I believe there will be refreshments there and a contest for the costume for best mermaid outfit, I think it is. Should be a lot of fun. Starts around 10 o'clock.
And everyone have to talk like a pirate, too?
Yes, you do. We have to go through all of those things. And we have a Greece trip that actually, it was October 30th, 23rd, and it actually filled up. And because of popular demand, we have, we're lucky enough to be able to hook up another trip on a week later, which is the 30th. So it is opened up again, October 30th. It's a great opportunity. We have lined up something very special, I think. The chambers in Europe, especially in Greece, are government-owned or run, and they we had the mayor actually write a letter. We sent it over. They were very excited about that, that our city is really behind and the idea of going over and looking at businesses as opportunity. And also, there was a owner of 11 five-star hotels in Greece. This individual is very excited about us coming and looking at some of the businesses that they have in Greece. So what he has done is organized 11 businesses that will be connected to what we do here as tourism and being on the water and all these other things. So it should be very spectacular in a business-oriented way. And, of course, we not only visit Greece and Athens and all the surrounding areas, but we also will be taking a four-day cruise, which can't hurt. And it's all around, $22.49, I believe the price is, if you're a member of the chamber, and it's a little more if you're not.
And then we could look forward to possibly having a new business down on the waterfront that is selling dolmas and souvlaki. When you get back, maybe a Greek seafood house.
Sounds like a business ready to happen. As I understand, there was a business in North Morro Bay that has been going through permitting process, and as I understand, it was approved. So a new sushi house should be coming into Morro Bay and North Morro Bay, and he promised me that it will be the best around anywhere for a reasonable price. That's what he wanted to do. That was his motivation, and he's even brought in a specialist or a special chef from Japan to train someone that he has hired. He's a master chef and coming in, and they're going to be doing some training, so he will be here as well as the training person until this person is qualified and able to maintain, as well as other chefs. So it should be very exciting. It will bring life into North Morro Bay. We were crossing our fingers that everything was going to go okay with that, but I talked to Bruce yesterday, and it looks like the permit was sort of issued, so that's a
excellent
positive.
Well, I can say the only thing better than reasonably, of course, the best sushi is always sushi someone else pays for, but the next best thing is reasonably priced sushi in Morro Bay.
That is, and he's very excited about it as well as we. I think that's about it. There's so much more. But
is there going to be an art in the park coming up?
Yes, there is.
I didn't hear that mentioned.
This shows you that this is our monthly report that we do, and activity for this month was 30,457 unique visits to the website. It consisted of a total page views of 129,000. We had 23 people sign up for our email newsletter, which is, as everyone knows, people who expressed an interest in getting more information about Morro Bay can sign up, and we send them a quarterly newsletter. The nice thing about our website is that we really have above industry standards as far as how long people spend on the site. Right now we're at 10 minutes, 23 seconds, which is a really long time.
That is huge to spend
on a website. So we continue to see that. As you see the bar graph there, it always looks a little alarmy, but this only shows half of the period. So this is April 16th through May 13th as of now. So as you can see, we have a really steady climb. March and April kind of evened out, but it'll climb as we get closer to the summer with people visiting the site. Categories, and they tend to kind of move around a little bit. Our homepage became the most popular this last month, with over 12,000 people coming to it. Accommodation search was next at 12,564. And then plan a trip is about half of that. And I think what's really important, and we've talked about this in the past, and this is a direct correlation with trackability of what the promotions committee is doing and whether the success of the advertising and promotion. And it's even gotten higher. We have over 66, almost 67% of the people who are coming to the Morro Bay website are typing in morrobay.org. So they're not typing in Google. They're not going in Google. The second one is Google with more just typing in Morro Bay. But again, that statistic shows that they had to find out about us some way. You know, the argument might be a little bit less if it was MorroBay.com, but since it's MorroBay.org, it's pretty significant.
And so the places they would have seen that have to be the ads and sites. In other words, it has to be some piece of our advertising that specifically lists our MorroBay.org website.
And I'm sure there's some repeat people there as well. But overall, I mean, they're going to the site by typing in the domain. So that's encouraging. That's the website statistics.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, John. So what I would do then is go to the actual budget report, and then we'll be back to John because you've got the rest of the budget. Do you have the overhead for the printout page? Am I hand that and have that ready for the gentleman?
And I'll go ahead, David, and pass out this.
Okay, yeah, pass out the budget. I think we note again, if we look at it, that our TOT is still looking very good for March. It is up a bit, although, as a colleague points out, that does include Easter falling in March this year. But Ed noted something very interesting, too, which is that there's a large increase in... Why don't you point that out, Ed? You had noted that.
Yeah, it seems there's a very big increase over last year in the vacation rental and the trailer park receipts. I think possibly either there's more vacation rentals coming online or our new ordinance about or the city cracking down more on the people who are having vacation rentals collecting that TOT that the previous years has not been collected, and that is showing up in our TOT. So it looks like to me like there's almost a $20,000 increase in vacation rentals over last year. Just the vacation rentals alone. So the city is
pretty spent out for the year.
Yeah, we're pretty much on target. We do have an item to consider a little bit later. In fact, I can cover it in my report. There was a request to look at fulfillment with our rack cards, and that would be about for 25,000, which is what we printed last time. And I think we'd want to look at a higher quantity because these would be utilized for trade shows and fulfillment. Also, the price gets quite a bit cheaper when you order more. We could do that for around $1,800. We could print 25,000 of those. So,
And put that under?
And it would come out of where we've got a little bit of money left over in our media, which basically just comes down to either we negotiated a lower rate or there might have been a publication that was cheaper than what we had originally estimated. So we have about $4,900 left to be able to utilize that, which would take about half that money. I'd recommend leaving the rest just as a balance because as you get toward the end of the year, you really have to have a little bit of a margin because there are some things that that can occur as far as rates and things like that. But I would recommend that we do that. I think Peter is in need of that kind of those things.
We are, as a matter of fact, and we do have a trade show coming up, Sunset Celebration. June 6th and 7th. Is that possible?
I was about to say, what's the time frame?
Yeah, we can probably do that.
Great. That's great.
Would there be any opportunity to do some small revisions to it, like pictures of the harbor walk and things like that?
This quote was really based on, and as far as the timing, this budget, this was just for the printing. We could certainly look at, I think you'd go through those fairly quickly.
Very fast.
But if we do revisions, we might not be able to make that deadline.
Is there anything on the current card that's actually not applicable? I see Bill giving it intense study over here, just making sure that it is current.
I think it would be nice to add the Harbor Walk, but like you said, for a deadline, maybe we get a small amount now and then revise it.
It might be just taking one picture, splicing a picture, and it might not be too difficult, but it looks pretty good.
I just have been hearing a lot of talk about that Harbor Walk. I think it's a good thing to promote as a city.
Well, what I would suggest, since I don't have a photograph of it, so if somebody has a nice photograph, maybe they could email it to me.
There's one really nice on a website.
Yeah, I probably need the original, so if you could get that to me at high resolution.
I believe we actually took that photo.
Okay.
Was that low angle picture?
It was.
Okay, yeah, that is a great
picture.
Look on the website, you'll see it. It's on the front
page. This one doesn't show very well. Just put it right in there.
Okay, we'll see if we can do that and still make the deadline. And we have a little bit again. If we go a little bit over to do the design,
that's the picture.
That's the photo, right?
It is a nice picture.
Yeah,
it's a little washed out there, but I'm sure.
We'll see if we can make that work.
Well, then I guess as an actionable item, we would. I will make a motion that we approve the spending of approximately $1,700 for the ordering
Probably ought to make it a couple thousand, just because if we're going to make the
artwork
revision.
Change. Yeah. So how do we make it a spending of approximately $2,000, plus or minus a contingency, for the replenishment of 25,000 rack cards for use in upcoming, we have a deadline for trade shows and other media distribution. So that will be the motion. Any discussion?
What was your date again, Peter?
June 7th. We're actually leaving on the 6th because we have to begin on the 7th.
I'll give two full work. City Council, because it is budget time in Morro Bay, and Susan was there, and I was joined by Ed and John and myself. Am I missing anyone? And Joyce, I'm so sorry, who was wearing two hats. I mean, she was kind of coming in that evening. To make a presentation, what we did was explain to the city in general why advertising pays. I think we heard this morning the best example from John, just looking at those statistics, the simple fact that people obviously see MorroBay.org as part of our advertising, and nearly two-thirds of them who respond to our website are responding to this advertising. And I think we presented some illustrations of exactly the type of outreach that we're doing and why it's important, as our colleague Ed Krovitz explained, in advertising, that momentum be maintained for a campaign, especially coming into what's going to be a difficult summer for people in these industries all across the country. So with that, there may have been some questions about the budget and what we do. I know there was have been some misconceptions. People have approached me on the street, and I guess having seen a Morro Bay assessment report that was done, mistakenly think that the city's advertising budget is over $300,000, but it's not. I've always directed them to our actual budget with what we work with, and perhaps, John, you could help fill in some of the details on that.
Yeah, I wanted to, and I think that I talked with a couple of the members of the budget subcommittee, and also talked to Peter. And I think it would be a good idea, just even though some of the committees has seen the email that I sent, but I just wanted to clarify a couple items to the council, which was the item you just mentioned about the budget, and just to clarify some of the things in the management partners assessment. Would you like for me just to read this?
Please do.
Record?
Please do.
I just said I wanted to address a few items in the management partners organization assessment study. While many of these suggestions I'm sure will be helpful to you, I would like to offer a few clarifications, if I may. I think that these will be important as you move forward with your efforts. There was a mention of tourism marketing. The city has, and this is a quote from the study, the city has a promotional and advertising budget of over $300,000 and provides over $146,000 in support of the Chamber of Commerce, in addition to several other promotional activities such as support for general promotion and advertising, local visitors center, County Visitor Center, which I guess that's assuming the CBB, and tourism program. Documentation as to the benefit or outcome of these expenditures is absent. The city should reevaluate all promotional advertising efforts and reduce these expenditures. So my comment back to that was, as you know, our budget for advertising last year was $129,000 and $20,000 for the website. I also take some exception to the statement about documentation as to benefit. When I addressed the council last week, I spoke about the website statistics and how the city received over 32,000 unique visits in a month to the visit from potential visitors. 64% came to the site. This was the statistic last month. It's actually higher this month. 64% came to the site by typing in morrobay.org. This is the direct result of the advertising. We also look at 800 numbers as well as reader response cards. And again, I think that's a good illustration of what we just did this about 10 minutes ago, the process of looking at those statistics each and every month. As you know, the Chamber in Morro Bay also serves the function of a CBB, so in this case, Pismo Beach is funding the same activity that Morro Bay does for $146,000, and Pismo Beach is spending $580,000. In addition, Pismo Beach also funds its advertising and promotions with a budget of over $300,000. City of Paso Robles also funds its own CBB with over $350,000, and performing the same function again as the Chamber does. I also wanted to take issue with the other item as it related to sales tax. The study used the City of San Luis Obispo as a peer city to Morro Bay. I felt this was unfortunate in that these two cities are very far from par. I would ask those conducting the study as to how Morro Bay compares to San Luis Obispo in sales tax retention and growth where are we similar? For one, Morro Bay does not have one car dealership. SLO has seven, including Ford, Chevrolet, Honda, Toyota, and GMC. These provide millions of dollars of sales tax revenue for the city of SLO. Morro Bay, unlike San Luis Obispo, has no Costco, Best Buy, Circuit City, Home Depot, or any other big box stores. Additionally, Morro Bay, unlike the city of San Luis Obispo, has no California State University or California Mission. San Luis Obispo should have, I feel, never been included as part of the peer study. And I felt that it was a shame that the partners did make a better effort to find more cities like Morro Bay rather than just simply one that has close proximity to the city. This is important as it relates to several comparisons made regarding sales tax and Morro Bay's visitor spending relative to San Luis Obispo and TOT. I thought the suggestion of a redevelopment agency was a very good one. As a planning commissioner in Pismo Beach for 6 years and chairman for five, I can relate to you that what has helped Pismo Beach. Pismo Beach has added new high-end hotels, restaurants, and other businesses. It is in the process of a total remodel by developers of the downtown area. Morro Bay is heading in the right direction, too, with the Anderson property, the remodeling of the Great American Fish Restaurant, and Giovanni's. Please give careful consideration as to how important the Chamber is to helping attract more businesses to Morro Bay and how the Promotions Committee has demonstrated its importance in bringing in tourists. There is positive momentum, and we need to keep that moving forward for a lasting solution. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I hope this is helpful in some way. But the reason that I did that was, and I think the council has a pretty good understanding of the role of the Chamber, and this is what happens, and it's nothing against this group that did the study, but sometimes you have to get really in-depth to how people word things, you know, CVB versus Chamber. And the sales tax, one of the things that I thought was unfortunate as we compare ourselves to San Luis Obispo is that we talked about sales tax retention in Morro Bay and how low it was, but I would challenge that most of the sales tax revenue that occurs in San Luis Obispo is by citizens rather than visitors. I don't think people from Bakersfield are going to come over and buy a car. They're not going to probably go to Costco. They're not going to go to Best Buy. And San Luis has an advantage in the sense that not only do they pull sales tax revenue in from their own citizens within that city, I go to Best Buy. I live in Pismo Beach. So I just felt like that was one area that I felt compelled to clear up. You know, my personal opinion, for whatever it's worth, is kind of getting a deal when you consider that the Chamber does the CVB's function as well as
Staples, J.C. Penney's, Home Depot, and on and on and on.
It also has industry. I mean, there's actually manufacturing in Ukiah.
That's right. And the same in Half Moon Bay. I mean, you would think would be, you know, an ideal spot. They really don't have box stores, but what do they have? They have two large wineries, and they have a Ritz-Carlton that brings in $2.5 million alone in TOT tax. Plus, there's 100, there are 999 other rooms available, that not even counting the 2.5. So when you take a closer look, and in Capitola is the same way. Fort Bragg is the same way. So when you look at this, It looks like it's apples to melons. You know, it's not apples to apples. So there are so many other things that I think that needed to be done to make this a really something that's very clear. And number one is, why wouldn't an interview be taken of myself for the VCB, for the Visitor Center, and certainly John? Why wouldn't the person who's been here for 10 years and knows how to benchmark, who knows how to find exactly the benefit of advertising, it would be a key point to talk to two people. This would have been changed completely if that would have at least had a simple consideration.
Well, I think you're quite right. The fact that John also handles Pismo Beach gives him an ideal opportunity to compare to widely divergent.
Well, I think that, you know, just to play devil's advocate for them, I mean, I am a contractor, so, I mean, there would be maybe some bias, but they certainly could have talked. It would have been helpful to talk to Susan Brazil, who's the CVB director, which I don't think they did. But I will say, just trying to be, you know, a little more positive on what the survey is ultimately saying, and it's part of what we're doing, and we express this to the council, is what they're talking about is trying to get, I mean, I think through the whole analogy of the city of San Luis Obispo, isn't more upscale visitor that's going to spend more money here. And that is something that we are trying to do with going in outreach and looking at target markets like Calabasas, trying to go down into the San Fernando Valley and bringing in those people that will stay for several days, the empty nesters that are going to do more than simply drive over for the day, bring a sack lunch, and go home. And so in that sense, I think that it's important to target that upscale visitor, but also to be the reality of it, we need to have a product for them as well. And that's where I think Pismo Beach, and they've been a little lucky too, just in the sense that they've had hotels that have been bought and remodeled, and Dolphin Bay came in, which charges about $500 a night. But those kinds of things take time, but it's all about redevelopment. And I think that that's where, and I'm starting to see it in Morro Bay, which is a great thing. And if more and more people feel encouraged and not discouraged by their future and their business and its benefit here, that's what's going to really, I think, help Morro Bay more than anything.
Well, one of the things, if I could add, you know, I do agree. Again, you know, you look at this and maybe you get a little offended by some of the comments that are being made here and not being part of it. Certainly that has an effect. But they did have, the very first recommendation was to take a look at the general plan, the new general plan that's sitting at the Coastal Commission's desk. It's been there for 3 years. If you look at some of the that, it's not easy to do business in Morro Bay. One of the things that made me look into this was, number one, we took in a survey of a commercial vacancy factor here in Morro Bay. We discovered that there are 16 vacancies. There were two more that were pending and two more that are going to happen. So we're looking at 18 to 20. Why is that? Is it because of the economy, or is it because it's a little more difficult to have businesses? I know, as I'm sitting here today, that the Chamber can assist on bringing these businesses in. But first, we have to be able to make it business friendly. I don't mean open up the floodgates. I mean that we have to be able to make it a little easier to do business here. I think it's nothing more like was what the situation happened with the sushi bar in North Morro Bay. There was just a communication breakdown. Just something very simple. When we finally got into the middle of it, and we discovered that, yeah, okay, for the most part, we're in agreement with everything, but there were certain things that just weren't explained. I don't think it's anything more than having a better understanding how the process works. There's a set of plans or general, I'm not sure what they're called, Rob. It's the general, something sitting, what is the proper name for that? Do you know offhand? The Planning Commission put that together about 3 years ago, and it was a revision of our
local coastal plan.
Okay, and as I was talking to some of the folks that were on that Planning Commission, it actually lessened the severity of doing business. What it did is it made it easier for businesses to come in. Some of the levels were easier to get a permit. It would be nice to get that through. I don't think. That we've put out enough effort to make that happen. I think we can do that. There's a supervisor that is friendly about getting some help to us. We can. One of the recommendations was, well, we're going to go into the Coastal Commission and say we need help. We're in an emergency situation budget wise, and this will help our economy. Once we get the flow going and we become more business friendly, all of a sudden our vacancies will start being filled. We'll get businesses who want to be here, who have a huge success potential to make a difference, and certainly sales tax increases. You know, we may have a lot of business coming in that a lot of the tourists want to participate in, but I would not advocate having businesses come in geared to tourists. I would have businesses come in that are geared to locals. Let's get that base secured. Let's take care of our residents. Let's make sure that we keep shopping local. Those are the emphases that the Chamber wants to emphasize. And to stop the momentum now is a problem.
In fact, I know, Susan, we had talked earlier, you were going to look into the whole buy local campaign thing. We had brought that up some time ago. And I think that, you know, this is the time before we get to November, December, that this is the year we really have to make, when the winter season comes, that it's a do-your-shopping local program. I know we had that BALLE, the B-A-L-L-E, Business Alliance for a Local Living Economy. They had that $100 package you could get that explains how to create a whole shop at home, keep it local program. Scale outreach in Calabasas and Simi Valley and Orange County. And we ended up having TOT last summer. That was the highest. So what I recommended was that we get exactly what we got last year
okay.
to move ahead.
Great.
And what I would like to say now, so that I think that concludes our budget report. I think we've made it clear. Any other questions or discussion regarding the budget? Not seeing any, we would move ahead to the Public Relations Subcommittee report. The Public Relations Subcommittee did not meet in this last month, so there's nothing to report.
You know, I still had a couple things under the ad agency report.
I'm sorry. Well, there you go. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. They're really brief. I just wanted to mention that, in fact, there's a little bio on George Lepp, and I'll just pass a few of these around. Basically, we're proceeding ahead trying to get a photography festival organized for next October. And one of the things that I wanted to bring to everybody's attention, which was very encouraging, we were able to, looks like, secure George Lepp, who is a acclaimed photographer, has lived here locally, now lives in Colorado. But he's available for the weekend of October 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And it sounds like that the only caveat is that we would have to get 100 people, which I think feel very comfortable we could do. And if we do that, then Canon would sponsor all of his expenses and would also pay for his seminar cost, which is normally about $3,000 for half a day. And I think this is the start of what we could do, getting somebody like Canon to be a big major sponsor, and then getting somebody like George Lepp. You kind of really need to build a festival around somebody, and I think this person would be a great opportunity to do that. I've got a couple of... if the gentleman for the computer could, I've got a couple of photographs just I wanted to just share with you. Thanks. And I won't go into, I won't show you all these ones, but I just have a couple of images that he's done that are really, really neat. But we're proceeding ahead, and we've got a steering committee now of local photographers. And so it's, I'm very happy to say it's moving ahead, and I think that having this gentleman, if you want to just power through a couple of these, that'd be great. As you can see, the quality of this gentleman's work is just incredible.
These are George Lepp's photos?
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's actually me. No.
Yeah.
That's actually me.
There you are.
Yeah, there we go.
He it has an office in Los Osos, too, where you can see a lot of photographs and stuff as well that are displayed
right.
out if you even just drive by.
But anyway, so that gives you kind of a feel. So I'm happy to say that we're moving forward with that. And the whole idea behind this, as I think everybody knows, is to really kind of create a festival very similar to the Winter Bird Festival, do it in the off season, and have something that's going to fill up the hotels, make it an event for 4 or 5 days, and we'll start working on trying to get sponsors and working with the chamber. And Heather, I could probably use your help because you're good at that kind of stuff. But I think now we got a date. I think we just need to work backwards from there and make it happen. You know, if this first one's a little small, I think it'd probably be good. But I thought it's going to have to be a whole, just like the Winter Bird Festival, we're going to need a lot of help and find out the facilities and all those things. But
are you talking about October 2009? Yeah. I see it. October, I think, is a perfect month. Fairly good weather.
Right.
You know, our festivals are pretty much, you know, over with until Light of Boat Parade. But, there's a window there if it's after the 20th or so.
Right. Yeah, I think the date should work out fine. And, David, I just had one other thing to report. While we're talking about surveys, I came across an old email from the person who was doing the fishing study, and I don't know if you all recall that they had supplied. We had given them, they gave us a questionnaire. We used our database to send that out. They were very happy with that. In fact, we were the most cooperative of any city. Morro Bay was, and they said if everybody would have participated like Morro Bay did and gave them all the information and helped them, they would be done. But they're not done yet, and they're trying to go back to Monterey. and try to get a little bit more help from them and have a better survey. But she did promise me that that they would, when they get those results, that they would share that with us. And that was basically, again, just to refresh everybody's memory, really about how the importance of fishing is to the different communities, such as Morro Bay, Monterey, and some of the other cities that they were looking at. So I think that information will be of value, too. We should be getting that, I think, within a couple months.
Great. All right. Well, now I've done this hopscotch through the agenda today. But so that would be the advertising committee.
Yes.
Public relations committee didn't meet. That brings us to the website committee.
Hi, Bill.
The website committee did not meet. There were a lot of other things going on, and actually I forgot about it. I was kind of like Bridget. The meeting kind of snuck up on us. I will say that the website is being more actively changed and kept up to date. I don't know whether it's John or whether it's Ani at the chamber that's doing it, but
yeah, it's actually both.
It was really this week and the last few events in the last 3 or 4 weeks has really been up to date, and I think they're right now a great job. I'm still hoping we're going to get that trolley map either on our website or the city website, either one.
I could supply just a little bit of what we're going to do for the website between now and the end of June, so we utilize the funding that we have. We want to get all those maps on, and I've talked to Bruce Ambo yesterday, and he suggested I talk with Janine and just get everything that they have. I want to get the most current, because we had a lot of variations. But we have it in the budget, and we're going to do that. We'll get those maps on. In addition to that, I talked with New Image Technology, who does the programming side of the website. And what we're going to try to do is plan a trip section of our website. Has been very effective. It's been one of the most popular sections. So what we're going to do, and it's going to involve buying a little bit of software, but we want to have an itinerary set up. So when you would go to the website, you could say, okay, I want to stay at the Embarcadero Inn, and I want to go kayaking, and I want to go to the market, the fish market. I want to go to – so all these things that you would list, and it's almost like a shopping cart, you know, as you when you would buy something. So you put all those in your shopping cart. And so it'll be kind of similar to what we have with Plan a Trip. It'll just be a little – it'll be quite a bit more sophisticated. And we are going to put more shopping. We have shopping on there now, but we want to make that even more noticeable to certainly assist the businesses. But as even this survey showed, you know, shopping always tends to be a really important thing for people when they come to any particular town, and it certainly holds true for ours. In addition to that, I'm working with AGP Video, and they shot quite a bit at the Kite Festival. They'll continue to shoot all the events. And we're going to have, as you all recall, little vignettes on the website. So people will be giving us little personal testimonials of their experience in Morro Bay throughout the site where appropriate on a particular page. And then we're going to send all of those vignettes and get them put on YouTube. So we have our own positive information about Morro Bay on YouTube. And all of that will be done between now and the end of June to take advantage of, you know, this remaining budget. And I think the whole web to you thing, we've talked about that. That's really a big thing with like TripAdvisor and all those. In fact, next year what I'm going to propose, TripAdvisor has some pretty good programs to go on their website and advertise. And also what I've found from TripAdvisor is that they want particular destinations to utilize their particular page. So in other words, if you're wanting to go on a vacation, and you want to go to Morro Bay, well, there's a page, a landing page that you would go on TripAdvisor, and we need to enhance that, and we can do that for free. We can actually put our video on there. We can put photographs because it's beneficial for them because they want their customers to be able to go to every destination site and have this really great site to look at and then have a link to our website. And all that's free. We don't even have to pay for that. But the other thing what I was going to suggest is that we can actually, I would suggest going on our competitors' pages like Monterey, Santa Barbara, whatever, some of the, again, the higher-end destinations. We can actually put an ad on their pages. And so I'm going to be proposing that for next year. And it's pretty sophisticated. And I know I've used TripAdvisor. I don't know if anybody else has.
Yeah.
But it's something that's really becoming very, very popular. People want to talk. They don't necessarily want to hear from a critic. They want to hear from somebody like them. And that's the whole web to you thing, and that's why we're doing the YouTube outreach as well. And it's a younger audience, too.
No, I agree. TripAdvisor, for me, for hotels, is the, that's why it keeps the hotel owners on their feet, because, you know, you look through the thing and it'll say, yeah, the carpet was sticky and I didn't like this and that. I'm okay, moving on. And that's so it is certainly definitely a grassroots approach to travel. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that. We no website. We move on. Best of Morro Bay. Any word there, Heather? Susan, I'm sorry.
I did meet with Brett Collier and Mary Gardner. It was back on the 18th of April. Their concern with a Best of Morro Bay type contest, like New Times, they didn't feel it was really a viable thing when they started looking at the logistics of collating all the information and how you would get the various businesses listed. But they also said that the whole concept is kind of suspect, really, because they had some kind of a setup where they had little profiles around a page and a big center profile, and each week or biweekly a different business would be profiled in the center, but you would still see that business in subsequent weeks around the edge, which gives people a lot of visibility. So that was one thought, and another thought was doing something like a local heroes campaign, something where people could write in just local people that they think are doing good things in their community. So, you know, there were some ideas tossed out, nothing really definite, mm-hmm. but they really felt that doing some Best of Morro Bay thing wouldn't be real viable.
Well, I certainly had my qualms with looking at the finalists in the New Times survey, but then I didn't vote, so I guess I can't complain. All right, well, you give it a shot, and we see what comes back. Thank you for that. Moving on then to new business. We've had our report on the roundabout. We had our Slow C representative. Silverado Stages. Yeah, Jim Fetterman, who is the new person at Silverado Bus Lines here, was going to come this morning and do a presentation. What I have heard from, I met some drivers, is that he's moved to town. He's very aggressive about marketing the Silverado bus. Michelle and I met him a couple weeks ago on the subject of finally seeing if we can get a bus to the train connection here so that we could actually advertise a car-free weekend in Morro Bay. He had more ideas about that, too. One of them was that he sees that the biggest group we need to attract right now are the German summer tourists. Seem to be the ones with money and a favorable exchange rate that are coming to the United States now in whopping numbers. And so I will contact him by email. Perhaps he had bus business that kept him away this morning, and see if he would be available to show up at the next meeting. But he did seem quite anything you'd like to report on that, Michelle, regarding his? They were able to talk
more
about travel.
We talked quite a bit about possibly doing, like, you know, getting them here. They would pick them up at the train, get them here into Morro Bay, and then they could, you know, be car-free all weekend and shop and dine, and then, you know, they would go back. There was some subsidy issue. You know, how do we pay for that? How does he make his money and everybody make their money? So that was, of course, the bottom line. I think it's a great idea, a great concept. We also talked a little bit about Hearst Castle. You know, we do Hearst Castle packages, but I told him, you know, my three hotels can't supply his bus, so it would really take a citywide effort to get some type of package maybe to go from Hearst Castle, you know, from Morro Bay to Hearst Castle. So we talked a little bit about those things, but again, it comes down to how do we actually logistically work it out. Santa Barbara is doing something similar. That was where David had came up with it. It's really neat. They do the flyers and everything, and they put, you know, restaurants. What did they have? Dining on there?
Yeah, it's got the participating hotel. It's got participating hotels, restaurants, and activities all for this car-free vacation package. And as I told Jim, Amtrak can't do it. They can't make the bus happen for us. But what they will do is if we create the text and the content of this card, they will pay to print them and place them in all the stations and on all the trains. So if you create the program, they will promote it. All we needed was the bus. Now we have this fellow, Jim
right.
Fetterman, saying he can help us try and make that bus a reality. Also, he showed an interest in, and again, you guys talk tour operators and things about, give us an update on that. We discussed and took action item on the rack cards. Bus tours from Central Valley Shopping in Morro Bay and Wine. Who's I didn't have that on my list.
Well, it was something that the chamber was was actually looking into, seeing if it was possible to create interest from the valley to get away from the heats per se in the summer and bring them here to our coastal weather and drop them off up in uptown and provide a lunch for them. Included into the price of the bus. It's a matter of finding the right connection with the bus. We might be able to use some of the chambers throughout the valley as collection points for people to get on the bus and come into Morro Bay. We're still looking into that. It's a really good possibility, but again, you know, we can't do it on our own. It's pretty costly in campaign money.
We may want to talk with Jim about doing something like that, because Jim, he's got a tour, he's got a bus.
No, we've actually called three or four bus companies, and they're very, very expensive. We're trying to keep the price right around $50 or $60, and if we can throw in a lunch to these folks, then all of a sudden it becomes pretty attractive, and then give them a coupon book, you know, to different businesses that want to participate in it, and then all of a sudden, you know, we have a shopping spree for about 6 hours here on Morro Bay and make it a walking, you know, a walking shopping tour, and there's no reason why they can't go through, you know, North Morro Bay and Central Morro Bay and uptown and then, you know, go right down Centennial Stairs into the, and then collect them back up, have lunch, put them back, and ship them home. You know, word will get out about the trip, and they don't have to deal with cars or anything.
Well, I'm sorry, I had one suggestion on that.
Sure, John.
And we'd probably have to consider this maybe for next year's budget, but one of the ideas would be to place an schedule with one of the radio stations over in the valley, and they then would get some compensation, and then let them organize the whole thing, because I know Chad Stevens, who works for me in the afternoons, also works on Cat Country. They've done a couple of bus trips where the radio station will get their listeners to go on a particular trip. Sometimes it's a concert. But what we could do, and this would just be another angle to it, and I've done this for other clients, is not only have them come over and stay, but have them stay overnight. And then what we would do is offer the radio station to come over here and do a live broadcast. So what happens is they come over here and they broadcast their radio program show, hopefully in the morning drive. They'll actually do their show here, but they bring listeners with them. So then the listeners come and watch the show being broadcast, and then in the meantime they get out and do all the other activities. But what we do when they come to do the radio broadcast, the ideal way to do this would be to have them come the day before, and we get them out to go wine tasting. They go to dinner. Obviously, the businesses would support this, because then they get interviewed the following day. So they go out and do all their activities, and they get on the air the next morning, and they talk about what a great time they had. And then they have the particular business come, like say if they're going to stay in a hotel, the hotel comps the rooms. But the hotelier gets to go on the air and talk about the property. And we've done this for Pismo Beach, and you own the airwaves. But the DJs, they love it, because for them, that's like they've just won this great prize.
Well,
they get
to
go 2 days and play.
If it's in summer, they've just cooled off, too. I mean, if it's the valley you're talking about, right?
Well, and yeah, we do it in the off season, but I mean, you could do it any time. But, and yeah, it's really, and radio is so great, because I remember one year, this was a year ago, not this last year, C-Venture was just completely fogged in, and that's where they were doing the broadcast. But the guy's saying, like, it's beautiful, the sun's out, you know.
Kind of like the chamber, right?
Greases, and it's like about 45 degrees, and you've got about, you know, 3 feet of visibility. But, hey, they didn't know. So that may be something to, you know, and even as small as just getting the radio, empower the radio station to do it and bring them over for the day. Because I would tell you that the Valley would love to do it.
Well, you know, even in the winter, we're better than the winter.
Oh, yeah.
It's special year round. So we could even make it in conjunction with what the chamber is going to be putting out here pretty soon. And this is a wine tour. And it's, you know, it's pretty reasonably priced, and we're working with Michelle and working out a deal with the hotels as well.
Well, let's talk to. I hope Jim will come back. He did say that it is expensive. He says he at the wholesale level he's now paying $4.60 a gallon for diesel for the bus.
Wow.
and he's ordering 10,000 gallons at a time in quantity. And so, I mean, but it's only going to get worse. I mean, obviously, that's for the bus, which can hold 45, 44 people, mm-hmm. compared to your private car. He's definitely seeing more people mm-hmm. attempting, you know, wanting to take the bus, and your seniors as well. Who wants to do a long drive, certain age? I think moving to this bus public transit demographic is probably a good idea, and let's hope that we can get him back at the next meeting to update us on that. That leads to number five, a DVD on, you know, we call it ecotourism, but what it is in the work I do outside of here, rare though it is, I have the privilege of interviewing hundreds of conservationists and conservation-minded people around the country. And one of the people I got to meet on this last trip to Texas in March is a woman named Ellen Temple. And by marriage, Ellen Temple's husband is Buddy Temple. He was in the Texas government for a while, in the Texas legislature, if I'm not mistaken. His father, Arthur Temple, owned what would have to be probably, it was called Southern Pines at the time, the largest lumber operations in the country was the South, all those Southern Pine plantations everyone heard about. And he became an ardent conservationist, actually. He always was. These are the good guys in the lumber industry, and they have donated untold thousands and thousands of acres because they realized you can't cut things down forever. And they saw the entire economy of this South Texas area, which is kind of sort of the deliverance country, fade. And they knew something had to be done to save it. So they've come up with, and they've worked with consultants, the kind of money I think should be spent on consultants for budget, to take, how do you take an area that has seen its fortunes turn based on an extractive industry and reinvent itself experientially, not leaving out, as I was so, that's why I wish the young lady had a chance to hear it, leaving out the human element of that. A lot of times you look at nature and conservation and you think, of course, about the birds and the wildlife, but there are people in that factor as well, and how to put those together. And that information from that survey that we heard earlier today, I think, would be when you hear them talk about lumber and logging and how they're reinventing their economy, just in your mind, imagine the words are fish and fishing, and see if we can make an equivalency here for these 6 minutes. So we run a DVD, clip number one, over here on the monitor, and it has audio. Let's see if we can... I thought I saw it earlier. There we go. And some sound to turn up the volume. We've got to turn up the volume a little bit here.
Plants and animals, water that's there, but I gather it can also be a way of developing a new kind of economy here. As part of that, I believe you've been active with the Texas Piney Woods Experience Advisory Committee. And I was hoping that you could tell how that got started and what they've been doing, what their goals are.
The Piney Woods Experience, Texas Piney Woods Experience Initiative, is just a very exciting project of the Conservation Fund. And we are lucky enough here in this part of East Texas to have the Conservation Fund's involvement. They have made us, East Texas, one of their top five projects in the whole United States. Because they see an ecosystem, the Piney Woods, which is under a lot of challenges right now. All the timberland that was once protected, in essence, is open space by the timber companies, has all been sold now. All the large timber companies have sold their holdings. And so that, you know, the challenge is, you know, how do you preserve an area at the same time that you help people make a living here? Because they've always made a living in East Texas by extracting the natural resources. Well, how can you do it and save the natural resources that we have left? And so the Conservation Fund, to my knowledge, is the only environmental organization that has both a conservation and an economic development mission. And it's so interesting. I was just reading the other day, and because the Nature Conservancy is looking into this too, other environmental organizations are realizing that they have to address the human economic development part of the conservation project. You know, you can't pull things out of, natural resources out of use and at the same time take away jobs from people. You have to figure out how to combine the two so both prosper. And so really the Conservation Fund's Piney Woods Experience Initiative addresses that issue. But we have a distinct culture here, we have a distinct history, and we have some, they're somewhat fragmented, but we still have some natural assets that we need to preserve. And so this Piney Woods Experience Initiative addresses that. And for the past couple years, we've had meetings up and down the Neches River corridor, you know, in different towns, to showcase what's beautiful about our particular part of East Texas. You know, we met in Nacogdoches initially, then moved on up to Jacksonville and Palestine, down to the Beaumont area, and then Lufkin. And it was really a great opportunity for each little community to showcase what they have, and it brought awareness. And the hope is that in East Texas, we can continue to build the kind of economy that places value on preserving these natural assets. You know, the bass fishing business is huge business. Well, you need to preserve some parks and some places along the lakes to encourage that kind of business. And when you encourage that, you know, bass fishing, then all kinds of other businesses open up around it. And paddling the river, you know, having access to the Neches River, I mean, that other kinds of businesses hopefully will build up around paddling the river, you know, building kayaks, I don't know, guiding, you know, tour guides. I mean, there are all kinds of things that can develop once we in East Texas open our eyes to the value of what we have. And that's what the Piney Woods Experience is all about. It's good. There's a website that, you know, lists all of our assets and invites people to visit them.
And if we hit the stop button on the, I think drive the arrow down there to the right and just hit the button mark stop. Thank you very much. Oh, is that pause or play? It's paused? Okay. Or you can eject. Anyway, now we've heard a lot of it before, but what I suddenly says, well, I'm going to go to the website and look up this conservation fund. And literally, as I looked up this conservation fund, what was interesting is that exactly the kind of stuff that we heard earlier in that survey is what they're looking to hear, that people come here for the open space. They're very big on open space. That people are coming to look at the, and again, what I would call our maritime heritage. You'll notice they put these in the heritage. Everything is sort of how you move from an extractive economy to a historical economy, if you will. And this conservation fund, and I will say that needs to be further researched, but they have the kind of money to throw at these things. The number I saw on the website for the Piney Woods Experience was looking like $35 million investment. And these are people who buy huge chunks of land. And if we come to them with the results of this, hey, we have a prime estuary, we have a pristine maritime, we have the, look at how people rate our pristine maritime experience compared to other cities, as this survey pointed out. That's why as I was hearing the results, I was saying that I think that's exactly the kind of stuff this conservation fund wants to hear, if they can be intrigued to make an investment in Morro Bay, where in a sense they say, you kind of have to mitigate the extractive nature, or the extractive, you had some statistics about how did people relate the most undefined of their survey questions was the one about how do people rate fish abundance, the dot waterfront perception, and how, you know, it had remained to the locals it had worsened, to some of the visitors it had either not changed or improved. That seemed to be about consistent. and the perception of environmental quality of the water, which plays into that as well. And so I'll just say that I think these things are real. These people in East Texas have somehow managed to get and secure the funding from these nonprofit organizations to make these things a reality. You know, it doesn't help that someone like Hurt, I should say, that someone like Ellen Temple was also good friends with Lady Bird Johnson. Obviously, these are big movers and shakers in the state of Texas, but it's not like we don't have our share of prominent people who love the Central Coast either and could probably be enlisted to speak on our behalf for that. So I will follow up for the next meeting on the Conservation Fund and see who they've done a lot of work. They, for example, did a similar thing. They have preserved a huge chunk of, what do they call that, the Lost Coast up you get off Highway 101 in like Leggett, and you travel down to the tour guide usually has a little California map in here. What's that? Shelter Cove. They've invested a lot of money in preserving those areas up there. So they have done work in California, and I'm just thinking Morro Bay may turn out to be a very appropriate city, or we can make it a very appropriate city by offering, just like that survey pointed out, the exact kind of assets that they're looking for. And exactly the economic situation that resembles that one in Texas to maybe attract them to make an investment in us. And that I will follow up on for the next meeting. So I guess I'll declare that as a future agenda item. This will be a follow-up on the Conservation Fund and the role that environmental tourism can play with our economy. Any other new ideas or future agenda items? Okay.
I don't know. I guess we always have our budget reports, so I guess we wouldn't. There probably somewhat. We'd probably want some sort of a recap on, you know, where we're at with where our budget stands. But
are we ready to work on a media plan for the actual implementation of the dollars that we hope we'll get?
Yeah, I think that we still have time. I mean, I think that'd be better probably to know what the budget is, because.
Well, Rob, you know, what's the schedule on the budget now?
They've got a budget hearing tonight along with the review of the management analysis study, too. So if you're interested in that whole study, the consultants will be at tonight's meeting. We'll be going over the entire report, and then they'll go into the budget hearing. I think staff's recommending that they adopt the budget tonight, but that's going to be up to council whether they need more further refining. If not, then it would probably be approved at their first meeting in June, if not now. So that would be the second Monday in June would be the target date.
So then we would have time to work on a media plan in June.
Well, I think what I would do in the past was I can certainly work on it. I have some ideas already. I mean, I could work up a preliminary plan and then present that to the
30%.
So maybe we'll know.
Well, we should. Obviously, our meeting will be the third Thursday in June, so that will be subsequent to that. So it looks like that the budget subcommittee has to meet sometime between the second Monday of June and the third Thursday.
From what Rob says, it's possible we might know tonight.
It's possible. All right. Well, then I suppose I will check my agenda book, but I guess I'll be making an appearance, public comment, once again at the beginning of the meeting this evening. I guess I will be appearing again. John has read his analysis of the marketing of the, excuse me, of the consultant's analysis into the record, and he sent it to council. So one assumes is there any need to?
I don't think so. It was given to all of council, and I'll make just a couple comments, I guess, about the management analysis study, because there's been a lot of criticism about it. You need to remember, I mean, yes, the consultants aren't perfect. They don't live here. We reduced their contract by about $35,000, so we had reduced hours on who they could and couldn't meet. But I certainly, at least my belief is, it's still a great starting point. If I could change one thing, I would say that they're not recommendations. They're more talking points, and that every single one of those recommendations needs to be analyzed fully to get the full understanding, because one of the graphs is kind of eye-opening, is that if we continue on the same path with increases expenses and not increases in revenues, we'll be unincorporated or bankrupt or something by 2018. So you know, that's it's eye-opening in that sense, in that we do, and it talks tremendously about the economic development that needs to occur and the promotion of tourism. So there's a lot of good stuff in it, but there's a lot of stuff that just, yes, comparing apples to oranges. And problem is there's no one like Morro Bay. I mean, we have the same problem when we do salary surveys, when we try to compare ourselves, trying to find us. It's just, you can't. We're unique. We don't even have a sphere of influence. We're not going to be annexing in any property. It's just very different. But I think it's a great starting point, but I think there's going to be a lot of discussions. The council will have on June 30th a goals and objectives workshop, and I think that's where they're really going to really dive into this report and come up with what do you want staff to work on in the next year, you know, redevelopment agency, cost allocations, whatever the other items are. So good starting point, but yes, it's got a lot of holes in it also, like any report does.
All right. Well, thank you all very much. Then it is, I would make a motion that the meeting be adjourned here at 10 o'clock.
Second.
Always handy on a second.
Second.
No discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye until the third Thursday in June. Thank you very much. There we go. I haven't had enough of the coffee yet this morning. Okay. As many people in this town may or may not be aware, as I've said earlier, I still play with toy trains. Long story, my therapist is involved. But anyway, the important thing and why it's relevant here today is this. I have before me a 40-year-old copy of Model Railroad Craftsman magazine, which dates from 1969, and its seeming irrelevance to our work here today is actually foretold by this. In an article from September of 1969 entitled The Metroliner Effect, the Metroliner was an attempt to bring a high-speed train to America 40 years ago. Penn Central officials have been somewhat surprised by the increase in the number of people riding their regular trains along with the high-speed Metroliner routes. The heavy advertising campaign aimed at getting travelers out of the air and onto the trains between New York and Washington has worked well for all of the Penn Central's trains. The trains are timed for convenient departures, and the advertising has reminded East Coasters that riding is more fun than driving. The airlines aren't concerned. Their shuttle flights are overcrowded anyway. Who said the passenger train in all its forms is dead? And here's the tagline. Advertising, we see, pays off. And that